Hello and welcome to the Sunday Night Podcast. I'm Melissa Doyle, and today we're bringing you our extended interview with Priscilla Presley. She met Elvis when she was just 14 years old, and while their marriage didn't last, she remained his closest friend through to the bitter end. In this episode, Priscilla shares with Mike Amore her treasured memories of the king of rock and roll and reveals how she is helping to keep his memory alive. Enjoy.
Well, Priscilla, sadly Elvis has been gone almost as long as we had him, but yet here we are. Why is that?
Here we are, yes. Here we are in a theatre that was built in the hotel that we just opened in October, the guest house at Graceland. Why? Well, you know, obviously he had a lot to offer. I think his whole story coming from very humble beginnings and making it to the success of which he attained, and I don't think ever in his wildest dreams he could have imagined being this successful, this loved. Still, 40 years later, just about, he's still very present in our lives. I know Australia has been huge in that, taking part in his success as well, because there's so many fans there, so many. I get mail continuously from Australian fans.
We've lost stars before, and, you know, they've been forgotten. But what sets Elvis apart?
Well, obviously the fans are helping, but I think, you know, coming to Graceland and he's left such an amazing legacy. People are curious about Elvis Presley. You know, he was the package deal, that the it factor that Simon Cowell had put together for obviously the entertainment that we get from American Idol, from America's Got Talent. The it factor, he had it all. He had the good looks. He was humble. He was generous. He was the boy who was so successful that his dream was to build a home for his mother, or to have a home, or buy a home for his mother. And of course, Graceland, which is still one of the most popular private home in this country that people visit. He looked great. He had an amazing voice. People who have been to his shows still, you know, could talk about how much he entertained. And, you know, when he did, one thing about Elvis is he was authentic. He was the real deal. I mean, even on his stage appearances or when he would go on tour, you couldn't help but fall in love with him. He just seemed to have it all. He was every general's soldier. He was every son to every mother. I mean, he just connected. He connected.
See these photos scrolling through. What do you think when you see these?
Wow. I get sad. It's like I can think exactly what he's thinking. I mean, even in the audience, you know, when he entertained that one shot before, when he's looking and singing into the audience, you know, he one great thing about him and his personality is that he could make fun of himself. He would go and make the sexy moves on stage. And in fact, the show that we have coming to Australia will show just that. I'm explaining is that he would do that little sexy move or do a little grind with the music, and he would stop laughing at himself, sometimes before the audience, because, you know, he didn't really quite get it. He didn't, you know, think that he was sexy or, you know, he was, when he first started, he didn't know why people were going crazy over him or what he did. He thought it was the moves. He, you know, he was clueless. And yet I think that was part of the charm of Elvis Presley. He wasn't taking anything for granted and never did.
I look at some of these photos and my dad had that haircut.
Yeah.
Because every man wanted to be like Elvis.
Yes.
I might have even had that haircut.
Yeah, he was, he set the styles for a lot of things. For fashion, of course, his haircuts and his smirk and his high collars.
Those eyes, look, he's
and
a
the
handsome
eyes.
Cat.
Oh my goodness, probably the most, besides you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that's just made my year. Thank you.
Besides, yes, he was not bad to look at.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
How hard is it to come back to Graceland? Because I read that you keep thinking even now he's going to walk down those stairs.
Yes, yes. His spirit is definitely there. There's no doubt. I can walk in the front door. I can visualize them coming down the stairs. I look over to my right at the music room. I can almost hear the music playing that he's playing, which was gospel basically all the time. The laughter just resonates in the house of when he laughed. He had a contagious laugh. His spirit is there. When I'm there alone and just in the room, it's just eerie. That was his sanctuary. Graceland is where he would go after every movie, after every recording session, after Las Vegas. When he toured, Graceland was his home base. That's where he felt most comfortable.
So fitting then, now it's something of a monument to him, the second most visited home beside the White House.
White House, that's right. Yes, you know, we've created... You get to experience who Elvis was coming to Graceland. You get it. Fans come in and they don't want to leave. I believe they feel him here too. They go into the home or they're on the grounds and they don't want to leave. They keep coming back, you know, continuously.
Do you remember the first time you laid eyes on him?
Yes, I do, very much so. I was only 14, actually only 3 months into 14. Visited him at his home in Bad Nauheim on Gothenstrasse, and never expecting in my wildest dreams I would get a call to come to visit again. We connected right away. Unbeknownst to me, that first evening I didn't know that, but I knew that he was singing songs and looking at me and trying to make me laugh because I was very, very shy. Didn't know much. I mean, it was more yes or no answers.
Because he was a superstar.
Of course, my God, he was the top of his game.
He was 24.
He was 24 years old, yeah. So, and I was there for his 25th birthday, and we celebrated his birthday, and just before he came back to the States, that was in January, he was leaving in March, with many, many fears of returning. I was kind of a sounding board for him. I was the person that he let out so much of his fears, his loves, his concerns, his thoughts about returning, you know, to the States and being forgotten. He was riddled with all of that because he was away for almost 2 years.
He seemed so confident on stage, and yet he wasn't really confident off stage all the time.
No, he was. I think once he got on and once he would feel the audience, the audience made him feel comfortable or responded to him is when he would start playing around and feeling a little more confident. But he was very, very nervous. When I tell this to people when they go, you know, Elvis never got nervous on a stage. Yes, he did. He was nervous. He would be in his dressing room and he didn't want to see anyone. That was the rule. You didn't bring any guests in before the show. He had to gear up for it. He had to get into the confidence, and he himself has stated. In fact, across the street we have, you know, his quotes of that I'm never confident. And you know, since I've been doing live shows, I do Panto in England, and of course I have my own show, Evening with Priscilla Presley. But I get it now. I get it, which I didn't when I was younger. When he said he'd get nervous, because it was hard to believe. Is that you don't know your audiences. They're all different. You're like when he was in Vegas, you had your dinner audience at that time, and then you had your last show, which was around, I think, 12. But the late show was the show he liked the best because the people had a few drinks. They were great audiences. Where when the dinner show was on, people were walking around. The waiters were still serving. So he'd get different responses. But he would always test his audience out to see. And sometimes in some audiences, it's more like, show me what you got. Prove it to me. Why are you Elvis Presley? He was always, you know, always checking out the audience.
When you moved into Graceland, it's hard to believe, but you were still going to high school during the day.
Yes,
How difficult was that?
Difficult. He didn't make it easy. No, because we would go to the theater at night. Sometimes I laugh at that. I look back and I go, what was he thinking? I had to be up at school at 8 o'clock in the morning. So we would go to the theater, watch a couple of movies. We'd leave about 10:30 at night because it was after Johnny Carson's monologue. And sometimes we'd watch two or three movies. I'd be home maybe 5 o'clock in the morning and have to get up at 7 to get ready for school and be back by 1 in the afternoon.
What did your schoolmates say?
Well, I'm sure they obviously toward the end of school they knew who I was, but people were very, very, I was very private and very, very, how could I say, respectful. I look back now, I don't know how I pulled it off. I really don't. You know, I never told anyone. It was just, Vernon did take me to school a couple of times in a limo, which I had asked if he didn't do that. Yeah. I asked him, please, you know, not to, because it would raise a lot of questions and it would put me on the spot. But I was really protective of Elvis even then.
You're a parent now. It's hard to believe you're even a grandparent. I'm a parent. What were your dear parents thinking to allow that?
My parents were a nervous wreck. You know, my father was quite strict. And rightfully so. I mean, we're back in the day of still, you know, late 50s, early 60s. It was, but, you know, he met Elvis and he met his father. That was the rule. He had to meet them before I continued even seeing him. It was on the third date that he said, no, you're not going. I won't allow that. And my parents asked to meet them, both of them. And actually Elvis brought his father with him. Not the whole family, obviously, but his grandmother was also there. But Elvis came in full uniform, which my dad liked a lot, and shook his hand, and they started talking right away, I mean, for an hour, and I'm looking at my watch, he's taking up my time. But, yes, they were nervous, and I think it was when I told my parents that they had to let me go, or they would ruin my life.
Wow.
You are going to ruin my life. And I think they got it then. And this is after many calls from Elvis talking to him. He set me up by saying, you start talking to your parents, and then I'll call and talk to your parents. There's a misconception out there. There is a rumor or so that, you know, I just decided to go to Graceland and went. No, this was a lot of planning through Elvis, not me.
And no sex. You're a beautiful woman. He was a disciplined man, clearly.
And he was an old-fashioned man. He really was. And he said, no, you know, you're young, and when once we're married and 21, and then it's all for the go.
Was that your happiest time?
Gosh, I had a lot of happy times, of course, you know, being together. I think it was a difficult time because of the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. The lifestyle was definitely different. Obviously, people think that rock and roll is all glamour, all wonderful, all fun. It is not. It's a very different lifestyle, especially for the woman or whoever is the spouse of the entertainer. I'm sure it's difficult for men whose wives are top entertainers. There's always the threat of someone taking them away. There's always the threat of, you know, being gone too long, and you know what happens in relationships when there's too much space between them. I was nervous, very nervous when he would leave and be away for any length of time. But he did call me every day.
Because we see him performing on stage with Love Me Tender. I mean, he spent more time kissing women in the
yes.
crowd on the lips than
oh,
he
yes.
did singing. I
yes.
mean, was that difficult to watch?
Yeah, because they'd start showing up after the show.
I bet they did.
Kind of hanging out, waiting around for possible more.
Was he a hard man to love?
No. No, he was not. Very easy. I mean, I've never met anyone like him, ever. He was very easy to love. You know, I would mother him. I was a child to him. I took care of him. I used to cut up his meat for him to eat.
Wow.
He'd have deviled eggs, and I would always take the top off so it didn't roll over, like he liked it hard and not soft boiled. And yes, I made sure that his napkin was on his lap, and I took care of him. And I loved taking care of him. I loved, you know, babying him, and we had our own baby talk, of which actually he learned from his parents, and he gave me the name that he gave his mother, which was Nungan, and that was young one, and he's never done that before, so he was very special in a lot of ways. You know, he still had that little boy quality.
Yet he was pretty controlling. He told you what to wear, how to look, where to
yes.
be.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he was grooming me, for sure. Things that looked good on me. He didn't like me, you know, to wear lots of color and prints, because he said it took away from who I was. It wasn't me. He would actually had me go back and change my clothes if he didn't like it. And he was controlling that way, yes. He definitely had an ideal woman. He definitely didn't like women who talk loud. Oh my gosh, that was, they were out before they could even come in. He didn't like aggressive women. You know, I couldn't sit with my legs crossed like a man. That was out. I mean, that was totally out. No, he had rules.
Do you still hear those voices in his voice in your mind when you're even now?
Sometimes I do. Yeah.
Don't cross my legs. Don't.
Oh, I don't. I never do that. I mean, I was taught right from the beginning. Well, I never did. I never did anyway. But when he would see a woman who would cross their legs like that, that was such a turnoff for him. A woman who smoked, turn off. I mean, he had definitely specific ideas of what he didn't like and liked.
And he had a temper.
Yes, he did.
I love the story that if he didn't like something on TV, what did he do?
Well, it was a certain mood he'd have to be in, for sure, in the first place. Yes, he did. I mean, Elvis was, as wonderful as he is, like all of us, could get upset about things. And when he did, you just kept quiet because there was no saying anything.
Because he'd pull out a gun if he didn't.
Oh, no, 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 no. He didn't do that often.
Did he?
No. I mean, he's
I was
kidding all around.
I'm glad he's not watching me right now.
Oh, no. Well, he'd get the point across if he was upset with the guys or something that had happened. He'd really be upset about it. You know, if something went wrong, it shouldn't have gone wrong. He liked things working pretty precision, with precision.
How hard was it for you to break away from that, find yourself?
A long time. It wasn't just something that I did. It was just, it was the lifestyle. I couldn't keep up. It was hard keeping up. And I had a daughter, and it just wasn't the lifestyle for a daughter or a son or a child. It was, you know, away a lot. And of course, you know, he wasn't faithful. Not that he had someone special, but when you're in the entertainment business, there is always that. And I tried to turn my back to that, but I just didn't want to share him. Simple as that. I didn't want to share him. And I think a lot of women can understand that. I think that men can understand that. I tried to turn my back. I even wrote it in my book in a very metaphorical way, that he needed to be like the peacock in the backyard, which we loved and was so beautiful and had this amazing strut, and when it would, you know, I guess, you know, prance across the lawn and mate, in search of mate. I said he needed probably to be like that. And so I was letting him go, but
it was the other women that really drove the wedge, the final wedge.
Well, no, there was no other woman. It was just the
Infidelity.
He always said he'd never leave me for another woman. But it's easy said than done. And wonder if there's going to be one that just might be another woman. It was painful. It was so painful. I just didn't want to. And I think, you know, with myself, I think that too was, it was hard to be me, you know, constantly always wondering, you know, if he was out or whatever. I mean, I sometimes look at him and go, how in the world could he do it? I mean, I don't really think in many ways, as much as he wanted to be married and have a family, I don't know if he was ever cut to be married, because I don't think he could ever be faithful to one woman.
And yet you remain friends, even in the divorce.
Yeah.
In court, you're holding hands, and the judge said you looked like you were getting married rather than divorced.
Yes. We had a really close relationship. We really did. I mean, people don't understand, and many don't, because, you know, he would call me at night. And I'm not that person that goes around, oh, Elvis called me. Oh, you're not going to believe. You know, I'm just not that person. I really valued his calls. I valued him telling me, you know, what was wrong. And I haven't really said this because I value his trust in me so much. A lot of rumors went out, so many, you know, because of the divorce. And people, it's easy to point fingers, it truly is, but living a life a lifestyle of rock and roll, or any, probably I shouldn't just say rock and roll, but any celebrity or a famous person, it's difficult. And especially rock and roll, because it's that old saying, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it is there. It's just
he was living that life.
Pardon me?
He was living that life.
They all did. And the wives stayed home, and we waited. And it just, it was hard. But one great thing I have to say is that, you know, we were always still close. We always still talked, and he would come to my house early mornings, maybe 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, he'd drive and come visit me. And we would talk, and he still told me about his concerns, and I still felt very, very close to him. We never lost our friendship and care for each other. You know, just because you get a divorce doesn't mean, I know divorce means horrendous things, and I never had to go through that. We never, you know, we went behind the judge's chambers. We never went to a court, or we never fought. In the beginning, it was difficult because of the beginning, and it was always a shock, and that was difficult. But we sorted things out in that we didn't want to be that way. We didn't feel that way that most people do. And because you get a divorce doesn't mean that you dislike or hate someone at all.
I was in grade 3, and my teacher, in country Australia, and my teacher interrupted the class and said, Elvis had died. It was one of those moments, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You know, it just, you never thought of him passing away because he was so strong, and because he would sometimes check himself into the hospital because he wanted to get away from everyone. He didn't want the demands. He didn't want, you know, the phone calls. He didn't want to see certain people downstairs at Graceland. These are just certain times. And so you thought it was one of those times. Well, no, he can't be. He can't be. This is a joke. This cannot be. It was shocking, like to the world, only a million times more.
Where were you when you received
the news? I was at home. Well, actually, no. I was when I got the call, obviously, I was at home, but my sister had called me because I was meeting her, and she said my dad was trying to reach me, that Joe Esposito had called him, and it was important. The first thing I thought about was my daughter, because she was supposed to come home that day. I remember getting in the car, or staying in the car, turning around, going back home, running every red light, trying to get there, feeling there was something wrong. And got to the house, I heard the phone ringing. I'm going, oh my God, and I get to the phone, try to get the key in the door, panic stricken. And I get it, I get to the phone, and that's Joe Esposito, and he told me, you know, that he called me Scylla, and he said, Scylla, you know, we lost Elvis, he's dead. And I just couldn't believe it. It was not even making sense to me. He's joking, that this is not a joke. It was beyond. I mean, I think I was in a state of shock after that. I know I went into my room. I know that I was, you know, he was sending the plane for me, but I was just, everything seemed like it was in slow motion, not real. And then the same thing on the plane, I told my parents to come with me, and no one said a word. No one said a word. We were all just sitting there in a daze.
Looking back, were there the warning signs he wasn't looking after himself?
I never saw him as bad as he was looking back. I didn't see that part. I mean, you know, hearing that he was not in good shape, and of course seeing him, talking to him, asking him about, you know, if he was okay. One thing you didn't do, you didn't tell Elvis what to do. You never told him what to do. You never suggested, really. I mean, especially coming from me. I was so much younger in his eyes. I didn't have the life experiences in his eyes, of course. And he would just say he was fine. He was okay. He was looking forward to the tour. But of course, I was concerned. I was there shortly before he had gone on tour, my daughter and I. And I was starting to see what people were saying.
What was that?
Just not taking care of himself, really. Kind of thoughts were, he wasn't having a good relationship at that time as well either. And he was trying to, as he said, get out of it. So it was, I attributed a lot of it to that.
He was in a bad shape. Looking back, do you think something could have been done to help him, to save him?
I don't know. I you know, like I said, you can't tell him what to do. You always say he was fine, and you believed it because he always was. But it was just Yeah, the last few years it was worse.
I'm the same age as Lisa Marie, and I can only imagine how tough it must have been for her to lose her dad.
Right.
Not only, she was in the house as well.
Yes. Yes. That's the first thing I asked. How well, not the first, after hearing about that with Joe, was where is Lisa, where is my daughter? That she was there, and she had a couple of friends that were with her. And once I got off the plane and went to Graceland and saw her, and she was with her friends, and she was, I think, in shock as well. I don't think it really hit her, you know, like it hit all of us. She would never believe that. She was thinking probably, you know, he was sick, and then the realization that he was gone. And then I would see her on her golf cart running, you know, playing around Graceland with her little friends, and it made me think about how with children, how they deal with loss, and they just kind of try not to confront it and keep continuing doing what they did. But yes, it was a big loss for her.
A lot of ex-wives would have walked away at that point, but you didn't. You decided to manage his estate. Why?
Well, I didn't decide that. It was Vernon who told me that he said if anything happened to him, to let me handle it. That was told to me. Vernon would come out to Graceland. I'm not to Graceland. To L.A. And this is after Elvis passed, and he was the executor of the estate. And he would take me to meetings with Colonel at RCA. At other meetings with Colonel, and I had no idea why. He had never done that before. So he was just showing me, in fact, Colonel showed us the first CD that albums were going to be much smaller now. They wouldn't really be called, you know, they wouldn't be, you know, even the 45s. And would show them to me, and this is what's going to be the future, this is what, you know, RCA is looking at, blah, blah, blah. And I had no idea why I was going. And then realizing, you know, when Vernon had passed, now I was going to be the executor along with the bank and along with his business manager, who they'd had for years. And then it started making sense to me why he was taking me to these meetings. And people go that, you know, Vernon and I were close and Vernon and I had made all these plans. It is so not true. Vernon Presley he wasn't the easiest person to get along. You never knew where you stood with Vernon. We always had a nice relationship, but never a relationship that we would talk business or anything that would relate to Colonel. It was just always very private.
How bad... You're right. How bad was his estate in? Was it on life support? He was running out of money.
Yes, yes. And it took a while for me to even come to terms with opening Graceland up, and when I realized that we had very little left to support even the staff that I kept there because they had been there and they were so devoted and loyal that I couldn't imagine closing it down. And then when it was said that the IRS and state taxes were due and we were running out of money, I just thought, okay, well, you know, Elvis said that he would never get rid of Graceland. We have to keep it. And then I was against all odds. Everyone was saying, no, you must get rid of it. Elvis is going to be forgotten in 6 months. And when I heard that, it was like, that could never happen. That could never happen. So then I went on a journey trying to find someone to help me, because they were not helping me, the attorneys and the business people, and to find someone to, it's a long story, but anyway, I eventually found Jack Soden, who we still have today, to be a CEO and to help me open up Graceland as a museum.
Did you think anyone would come?
No. No, never. Never. Jack has the greatest line. He said that it's like having a huge event or a huge party and inviting everyone, but, you know, we weren't getting any RSVPs, so we didn't know how many people would show up. And both of us were just, you know, counting the days, going, oh my gosh, is anyone going to show up? And lo and behold, I mean, we had such great press. People showed up, and it was... a journey, and we're still looking at each other today when we are together going, did you ever think? So it's just rewarding, and the fact that Elvis would never, ever have believed, you know, that that's his home. is now a museum, but would have loved it and would have probably been, as we say around Grayson, the first tour guide, because that's the first thing he did was show his place.
But he was private. Was it hard to see people going through what was such a private place for him?
Yes, yes. It is, because it still feels very much like a home, and that was always, always in the play. It had to be left a home. It had to be left the way he left it, really, or he wanted it, and how he enjoyed it the most. It is still, I look at it as a private home, because my daughter and I still go to Graceland, and we still, when we're all together, have dinner at Graceland. We continue the tradition. And so after it's closed, it's a private home.
And 40 years later, you've opened up this beautiful hotel, you're opening a new museum. I mean, that says something about this man's legacy, because a lot of his fans are getting older.
Yes, they are getting older. And I think, too, what's happening with him still being so successful and so alive in the older generation's lives, that they're passing his legacy down to... We've got great-great-grandparents, grandparents, and parents, and now their children. We're seeing more young adults here than we've ever seen. And we're making it much more friendlier for them, too, with their iPads or the little computers that they all carry around now. And what we're doing now with the museum, we're taking things out. Now we're tearing down the old retail across the street and go back to the vision that Elvis had when he first bought Graceland, and that is not to have anything there in the front. So you're not going to see the retail out in front of Graceland. It'll be a grassy area. So now retail will be in back of that so that it's not seen through the eyes of the viewer from Graceland across the street.
I have two pairs of jeans. Elvis had like more than 90 jumpsuits. I mean, how many jumpsuits does one man need?
Well, how many shows did he do? I mean, he always liked to have his audience see something new. Bill Ballou, his designer, would come up with some of the ideas. Elvis would yes it or no it. And that was a nice surprise when Bill and him got together. He couldn't move in the suits. He started out with just suits, two-piece suits, beautiful, but he couldn't move in them. And he would rip them, so he needed something more pliable and told that to Bill, that he can't do stretches, he can't do the karate, little kicks that he did, that he liked to do. So Bill found the fabric, and then it's much stretchier, and then he was able to do what he wanted to do, move in it, and feel more comfortable. It actually progressed in style. It started out quite simple in style, and then because the audience went nuts over it when he, came out in these beautiful suits. And then it came with a cape, and that was just, again, a first time when he came out with a cape, and people loved it. And then he threw a couple in the audience, and, he just put on a great show without all the fireworks and all the productions. And I think, again, I go back to him being so authentic. And yes, kids, the show that is going to be shown in Las Vegas, listen to me, I'm in the past, in Australia, you will see sides of Elvis that you've never seen, because the shows are the best of the best in the hour that we can get out, almost 2 hours that we could get in. You see the 68 special parts of him there, and which was so nervous, because it was the first time he started entertaining again on stage in 10 years, and which was a huge success. So you see that. You see some of the finest in Vegas, and of course the Aloha special. You see him kidding with his audience. You see the rapport that he had with the audience and with his band members. You see his sense of humor and him laugh and that contagious laugh that he had. The song choices were songs that were diverse, songs that people didn't know about or that had forgotten songs. You know, we have Grass, Don't Pay No Mind. We have Just Pretend, Don't. And you think a 21-year-old singing Don't and delivering that song with really not all the experience of what that song is about. And you go, wow, this guy was pretty amazing. The shows were sold out in Great Britain. People were crying, they were laughing, they were dancing on the aisles. And the thing that touched me the most and brought me to tears, because I would go after each show to look at the audience to see what they were responding to, they were in awe of him. I mean, truly in awe. People actually felt that he was live on stage singing, and they were yelling out his name, Elvis. Elvis, and it's just, I get chills thinking about it. And was that impactful?
When you think about the name Elvis Presley live with the 40-piece orchestra.
Right.
It's kind of one problem with that name, isn't there? Did you think that was a crazy way to promote it?
Well, you're seeing him live on stage, live on stage. I mean, you can take that, but that's what you're seeing. You know, he's never performed in Australia, but you're getting a very live emotion from these people. You're getting a very live connection with Elvis Presley for the first time. You will see why when you say live. He is on that stage, and when he comes out and addressing the people, you think, my God, is he here or not? Because it's done beautiful with the orchestra below, and I think it's a 40-piece orchestra, and then this big screen on top, and on the sides you have visuals. You can't take your eyes off him, and you feel like he's live.
So it's great to see him back on that stage.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, every show I'd go back, one of the songs, and I'd go look and watch and get chills because I feel like I'm sitting in my booth that I always sat in, and I'm sitting there watching. And it's like I have to pinch myself.
Whose idea was it to keep all of his belongings? It's such a huge collection. I mean, my wife throws out my belongings. Whose idea was it to keep his?
Actually, Vernon Presley saved everything. He never, thank God, he never threw away anything. We have receipts for almost everything that they bought, that Elvis bought. We have that. We have the Colonel Parker collection, of course, and a huge collection. In fact, a lot of this isn't going to be shown in the museum across the street. Car collection that we have, first time we could ever show all the cars together in a collection. So he didn't get rid of anything, and we were able to buy back with our auction things that were sold off.
What was his most cherished belonging that you have?
Oh my gosh, his most cherished. I think the award he got from America's Most Outstanding Young Men. He was very, very proud of that. That was a huge validation for him. Elvis wasn't materialistic, believe it or not, in that he had to have ownership of everything, he wanted everything. He got things he liked. And you know, Vernon kept them. Vernon didn't give them away. Elvis gave a lot of things away. I mean, if you saw a ring in his finger and you said you liked it, you know, he'd look at it and give it to you. He wasn't a possessive or obsessive about material things. So thank God for Colonel Parker, but mostly Vernon Presley for keeping all the things that he bought. His suits were in his closet upstairs in the extra bedroom. All the jumpsuits, all his clothes, all kept. Nothing was given away. Even old lawn furniture. Vernon was afraid that someone would take it and then sell it and you'd see it. So he kept that. And we even have that and had that in the Palm Springs storage as well.
You know, 40 years on, you still miss him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt. He was, like you asked before, you know, was he easy to love? Absolutely. He just, you know, he gave us so much. He gave us so much. It's giving back. It's giving back to all the fans that come here to show what he had. Yes, a lot of it's personal. A lot of it is. But I think Elvis, you know, sharing himself for people that never knew who he was. For me, it took a long time to get where I am now, to accept it all, sharing so much of him. But I figure I have to, because he was very special. He's very unique. There is no other entertainer, many, many good ones, that had such impact in this, not just in this country, but all over the world. My traveling, I went to Africa, and I walked into a place where we were traveling on a road, a very, very lonely road, let's say, from Johannesburg to the reserve, the game reserve, for sightseeing, and walked into this little place because we were hungry, like a hamburger place. And I walked in, and the first thing I see is Elvis Presley Boulevard license plate. And I went, oh my gosh, and a girl recognized me. And everybody in there were going crazy saying how much they loved Elvis Presley in Africa, in a remote little town. That's pretty amazing. India, the same thing. So yes, it was difficult for me to share so much and open up so much because he was so private, but I know that he would have loved to have shared Graceland and loved to have shown what, you know, he accomplished in his life. And that was a big thing for him. When you asked about what he cherished as far as, like, let's say, awards or whatever thing, material things, Graceland is really the statement of him making it.
Because he was frightened he was going to be forgotten.
Yes.
He's not going to be forgotten.
Yes, he was. He thought that he'd be 40 years old and he'd be... His thing was, I can't be a 40-year-old singer doing rock and roll on stage. He was already thinking that. And yet he was still very, very popular back then. He couldn't, in his head, fathom that he would still be popular with all the groups that were coming in, with all the talent, which he was never jealous of. He thought there was room for everyone. I mean, he was such a sharing, giving human being. I don't think he had a jealous bone in his body. It was like, it's for all of us. So I think this show is going to be wonderful for everyone to get to know Elvis Presley much better. If they loved him of who he was, they'll love him even more.
Thanks, Priscilla.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our Sunday night podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And remember, you can find more information about all of our stories on our website and Facebook page. Until next time.